Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Distraction Pieces. My name is Scroobius Pip. How are you all doing? It is a delight to have you all tuned in again. How have you been? Obviously, you can't answer that because you can answer, but I just can't hear you. But I'm glad you've all tuned in. We've got a hell of a podcast for you today. I'm joined by a genuine, a living legend, pioneer, icon. I'm joined by Goldie. I'm so pleased to have him on. We've been trying to organise this for a long while, and we've gone back and forth. It hasn't worked. It has worked, but now it's timed out perfectly because on last Friday, on June 16th. The Journeyman came out, which is his real return, his first real kind of return after 20 years, it's seen as, and he was up for coming on and having a chat. Before I get into that, I should mention, we are sponsored as ever by Speech Development Records. We released swimwear, as I keep mentioning, a lot of you know, it's been going down crazy. The sunglasses sold out in just over a week. We've just got the new stock of sunglasses in, so when you're listening to this, they should be available now at speechofelementrecords.com. They have the label slogan of we may not be for you, and that's fine. So they should be at speechofelementrecords.com now. If not, they'll be up in the next couple of days. So yeah, on to Goldie. If this is the first time you've listened, I recommend you go and check out a load of previous episodes. We've had people like Mike Skinner might be of interest, or Roots Maneuver, Killer Mike. Let me think, who else? Kate Tempest. Had loads of really good people. So go and check those guys out. I'm a lot. Also, I recently did a post requesting people to recommend female guests because being, you know, a male, I have a lot of male guests like in my circle and in my, I have a higher percentage of males in my circle than female. So it's always good to get that injection of people you'd like to hear and people that might be good. And the response I got to that post was absolutely insane. So I'm now inundated with amazingly fascinating women. I had one person get all annoyed because I've said numerous times I don't base booked on gender, but it's good to have recommendations. So when I'm picking in general, there's a wider mix than the slightly male heavy list I already have. And I had one person being like, oh, you say you don't pick on gender, and then you ask for a load of girls. And I kind of get his anger. I've said numerous times I get annoyed when people tweet me or request, can we have more women on the podcast? Because that's a disrespectful request, in my opinion. Request specific women you'd like on. So rather than just women in general. But the reason I asked for that, I'm rambling on a bit now, but when I had Josie Long on, she wonderfully explained that, whilst I don't pick based on gender, the range of people in my mindset and vicinity in the entertainment industry and things like that is going to be weighted towards males, and she's quite right here, because of the previous, the kind of history of male, a favour of males in entertainment and things are like this. So it is good to consciously try and rebalance that. It's not getting anyone in on a token level or anything like that, but it's good to consciously refocus that. I'm rambling and this is nonsense. I got to sit down with Goldie, and the dude is an icon and a legend. You're going to enjoy this one. It goes off on some tangents. It kind of felt like I was riding a wave. I jumped on my board. I tried to stay afloat as long as I could. But yeah, he's an absolute dude. It goes off on some tangents, but some of the knowledge he drops is intense. The way he describes his history and kind of his future is fascinating. So I think you're going to enjoy this one. I'm going to stop rambling. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 156 of The Distraction Pieces with Goldie. Right, I'm recording, and
I'm going to bend this up a little bit more.
Go on, angle it how you like.
Said that Vicky to the judge.
Get that how preferred. Oh, it's going.
Cool. I got it.
You got it?
Yeah.
I'm joined by Goldie. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. I'm having a really rather good time.
Adjust this. This is.
I'm having a really, really good time. That's even worse. I'm going to bring this back up.
Some mic adjustments. Hang on, let me get. I think we get an
inch
in.
Get it back in.
There we go. That's going to be the one. How's that?
Yeah.
Golden.
I'm having the absolute time of my alchemaic life, I guess, if that's even a word.
Yeah.
I've just kind of. I had to go away into Asia, and me and my wife built this house there. We found the land and jumped through a lot of hoops. It was a very serendipitous process where we got this place. It was weird. It just happened.
Oh, whereabouts is it? Is it quite out on its own?
In Thailand, yeah, it's on its own. It's faces the canopy of the jungle, up in the hills, got the sea to the right. And just going there and thinking, I'm done with it all. I kind of felt done with it all. The divorce killed me years ago. Mm. And I kind of got back on my feet, met my wife, who's an amazing, amazing muse, first and foremost. Very unbelievable human being. And, she was living in the shadow of this old house, which, you know, had gone through a really bad divorce. And
yeah, a lot of history
there. Bentleys and a lot of bad history and a lot of drug abuse. And the usual bullshit parody versions of me, kind of ghosting around the place.
Yeah.
And I decided that, I broke my leg on one reality show too many, which was, I think, called The Games.
Right.
Which was, you know, and it was what I still call to this day the beautiful accident, because I met my wife because of a cancelled gig and ended up in Shanghai on crutches.
Oh, really?
Meeting my wife.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it was, and then she came back to Shanghai, we met in Shanghai, and then she came back and hung out with me in Japan for 2 weeks on a bullet train of all places, and we just went around the country and listen to B-sides of records. So it was really crazy, because I'd pretty much fuck everything that moved at that point in my life, you know what I mean? If it was a goldfish, I'd fuck everything that was moving, attracted me now. And, of course, a lot of drug use and everything else. And I just decided, I actually started writing letters. For like a year, I'd wrote letters. It was my friend Fish, Lawrence Fishburne, sent me this rather beautiful kind of cinematography by a guy called James Colburn, or Cobalt, and it's called Ashes to Snow. You'd love it.
Right, yeah.
Cinematography at its best.
Yeah.
Three-tiered, swirling dervish, leopards that live with old people in Africa. You can't see if they're men or women. They're just so creased. They're just so ancient.
Amazing.
And an Indian family that live with elephants.
Wow.
And he spoke about this thing. Fisher narrated it, and he said, you know, I write these letters. And he burns the letters and throws them into the river.
Wow.
But, apparently Colbert stayed there for like 15 years doing this project. So I felt there was a time to write. Because I'm really weird in, one, I'm writing capitals, and two, I'm writing like graffiti fonts, as you know, we come from that kind of background.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm writing a lot of Japanese and Chinese paper. I find a lot of good Japanese paper.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to write on.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's closer thing to skin.
Yeah.
And I then decided to write letters, and even on my wonderful muse Mika, her name is, she didn't write back that much, because she didn't like writing. She was very, very quiet and unassuming, but it became a bit of therapy for me.
Yeah,
over a long period of time, because the letters we get are bills, or you know, the thing that comes through the post is like, I want your money, and I'm gonna
100%.
To actually write letters, how are you? What are you doing? What are you up to? What do you write then?
Yeah, the act of putting it on paper, and the act of feeling, rather than just
speaking because you can speak, the feeling of what you write, it has to have some worth. There has to be a reason to write it, rather than just, I'm talking. Anyone I'm just, on a night out
can talk for
hours.
And it's the thing as well as you know, I always remember Clint Dyer as a great theatre actor, and he was mentored me for years when we did Everyone Loves Sunshine with Andrew Goff, which was fucking straight to DVD. What a fuck up that was. You know, Barry ended up financing a lot of that film.
Right.
Andrew Goff spunked it, I think. It was, could have been a great movie. The script was amazing, but he just kind of spunked it a little bit. But I always remember Clint, you know, I played the nemesis to him. He said, you know, you're going to go outside and here's the script. You're going to go outside and go to the car and we're going to drive off. Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to go outside and go to the car. I'm going to get up in the morning and go outside the car. Yeah, but when you get up, what's the weather look like?
Yeah.
What's on the floor? What's the door handle like? When you open the door, does a breeze come on your face? As you go out that door and you walk into the steps, what's the weather like outside? When you open the door to the street, is it cold, warm, is it raining? And your car, is it cold as you touch it? So you're setting that premise of what the whole thing is. It's the realness of writing the letter. The action of doing it.
Yeah.
It's loaded, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's loaded with that kind of intention. And I think the process of going through with it, with anything now, what I seem to have realised is that no one ever told me that the Pandora's box would be that powerful.
Right.
Because you open it up and it's an unbelievable force to be reckoned with.
So did you find that? Did you find that writing a letter's made you look at where you were and who you were more than you maybe would have? Stop and look around, because you're thinking, I need to write what's going on. I need to write something here. It makes you more aware.
Yeah, I wrote a monologue, what was going on in my head. And I'd be really far out in some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I would go into childhood stories and stuff.
Yeah.
I would go in to tell these mad stories once I was a kid. So it became this real, there's some classic stories that have just kind of made the book, really, which is the book I always wanted to write, as opposed to the one that the last chapter is about the ex-wife and you know, you're paying for her sins or your sins.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, less of the who I'm meeting along the way.
Yeah.
More of the, you know, story of my horribly swollen penis and the red go-kart and Jasper in the red go-kart and great monologues. You know, over chapters of just my experience in the care system and who I saw and also being in the time machine. I always felt I was in this time machine of, you know, samplers were my time machine of going back and forth and having music to look at as my timeline.
Yeah.
Of remembering things. So, yeah, I just writing all that stuff, and it's really allowed me to kind of have the discipline and the patience is more than anything.
Yeah.
To kind of go, don't use the same words twice. Try and look at where you're going with this. Is there a get-back aspect to this letter? Where it's like jazz, you're presenting an idea in the beginning, and it comes back around. You know?
Yeah.
It was a real therapy for me, man.
Yeah.
But then she just, when I went there after a year, I was, you know, we had to get the shagging stuff out of the way, which I'd never caught you. I'd never had courtship before.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah.
I've not got the goods here, so I'm, you know, I must be, I'm like the Arab world, or, you know, whatever else.
Again, it's a weird thing if you've lived a large part of your life as Goldie, as a character or as a figure that you've already got that you can, there is a shorthand almost that if you're touring or whatever, you're meeting someone
for
sex
time.
Or whatever else.
It's, bollocks. You know, I've been there, done it.
Yeah.
But the thing about that was that I felt that the boy I'd forgotten about. The boy starts coming out.
Yeah.
And, of course, don't talk to the boy. Keep the boy locked away. That was always the thing with me.
Yeah.
With, you know, and I think the Hoffman taught me that. I did the Hoffman process going back 10 years ago now, and that changed my life completely.
And what's the Hoffman process?
Look it up. It's a real, it's a serious 10-day intensity of dealing with the quadrant of your existence, like how... I'm not one for cults. I'm not one for, you know, I went to Antigua to Eric Clapton's gaff. Please get my 18 grand back because, you know, people sprinkling corn, you know, crack on their cornflakes.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I'm also getting berated by, you know, religious people that I've got across the road when I see a pub.
Sure, yeah.
The modern world, that dealt with the 70s and the 80s, all right. But I don't think that kind of step aspect of it works for certain people in certain ways.
Yeah.
But I think the new generation with the vibration and how we are. I think a synthetic set of kids from the 90s.
Yeah.
It's a trickier thing to handle more going on. Yeah, I think.
Completely.
And I think the Hoffman process kind of empties the box, but then it takes the box apart and finds out how the box was built.
Right.
How IKEA flat pack it is.
Yeah.
How it
was
delivered.
Yeah.
Was, you know, the process beyond the design of the box.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because things were cumbersome in the '80s, and now we think as a design point of view, fuck, why don't we think of that? It's fucking simple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
How mundane and stupid a guy looks with a mobile phone in the '80s carrying a fucking car battery looking like an absolute dick with a pair of high waisted and a beeper.
Yeah.
High waisted trousers and a beeper, he looks silly, doesn't he? So I kind of looked at the whole process of writing. And there are no full stops in my life at all.
Yeah.
Only full stop there'll be is when I'll leave this one for the next one, I guess, in whatever capacity. So I just kind of did that, which also kind of provoked the book and writing that stuff. And it was called, you know, it was based on Proust, All Things Remembered.
Yeah.
You know, which I find was very fascinating. Kind of got that from Bukowski when I was young. You look at stuff, and I was never a strong reader, but certain things I'd read, I like that. Will you read it to me?
Yeah.
Or I was given great books by people and people would give them to me.
Yeah.
I remember Fish giving me a book on prison poetry, which is kind of the origins of rap in Philadelphia.
From
in prison and how people would spit and do stuff.
Yeah.
And he recited it in Cannes one time. It's done of Versace's gaff.
Yeah.
He's reciting his poetry in a room full of fucking trendy people and he's like... Yeah. And he just went, what the fuck is that? He says, it's prison poetry. I'll send you the book.
And it's amazing how much of that, the prison poetry and everything from kind of the last poets and Gil Scott Heron and stuff like that was made as, it's made to be spoken. And then it gets taken on potentially by a more pretentious world and put into books. It's well, this was never written poetry. It's a separate thing. And people say, oh, how do they compare? It's like, they're not trying to compare.
They're not trying to compare.
It's its own art form and its own culture.
It's in its own art form. And the way that the raconteur...
Yeah.
You know, I learned that word recently. My life's backwards like a Hayoka, and if anyone of you don't know, an Hayoka is a type of Indian tribe. They're kind of like, I guess, a Chinese version of Drunken Master. They walk backwards through their life.
Right.
And I was always told that I was always walking backwards in my life by various shamanic people I've met.
Yeah.
And one girl called Laura, who's no longer with us, she's dead. She was a Detroit promoter for Techno Boys, look after Derek May, all those guys. She gave me this book on Hayoka. And how foolish they are, and they fall over and everything else, and crazy. And I always felt that was my life, because I've always tried to... It's like a film noir going backwards with all of the deja vu's going on, all of this past life shit.
Yeah.
Trying to gain some kind of sensibility and all.
Yeah.
But getting to this point and realising, just let the fuck go.
Yeah.
It's about letting go is what it really is about.
Yeah, sure.
So with the Hoffman and everything else, I kind of cut all the umbilical, which was the big thing. The big process, the mother and the father, because we always think we're not like them, we're exactly the same as them.
Yeah.
I'm afraid.
Whether we like it or not.
Whether we like it or not.
The good and the bad.
Including the good and the bad. So I dealt with that. And then when Mum died 3 years ago.
Right.
It was a massive point for me to change everything.
Yeah.
Because it freed me from this stuff. And then go on to make the album, The Journeyman, which was... It is my magnus opus. And listen, do me a favour, don't go out there and buy it. I'm not here to sell you an album.
Yeah.
But in terms of me having to convulse the it's like watching that cat.
Yeah.
That final hairball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've had to let go. You know, I think we stir. And it's really interesting because it's finally the only time at 51, approaching 52 rapidly, that I have something that's my own.
Yeah.
And it's the Sound Sick Method.
Yeah.
Not in the dictionary, seances, but Sound Sick's not.
Yeah.
And it's the Sound Sick Method. It's raising deities within an engineer and all these things I keep getting from the muse of the universe coming through to my head and channeling it in the right way.
Right.
The album's not mine.
Yeah.
I didn't make it. I just channeled it, that's all. It's not me making it.
It's kind of when I heard that you were coming back with a new record, it was hugely exciting for two reasons. Number one, it felt you're at a point where you will only be making a record because you choose to. Do you know what I mean? It's totally. Like you've left enough of a gap that no one's telling you you've got to do this.
Yeah.
And number two, seeing following you on social media and crossing paths every now and then, but seeing how at peace you seem because of yoga and all this kind of thing, it seemed like you are the most comfortable in yourself. Therefore, if you're choosing to make a record, it's because it's something that has to come out of you, rather than, I know I can sell it, I know there's demand, oh, I feel a bit out of the spotlight. It felt like it's like you seem to be at a point that the only reason for making a record is that it's a record that has to be made.
That's a really great way of looking at it. And, I've not had anyone hit the nail on the head. I wanted to come here because I'm a great, huge admirer of what you've done for the arts.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
And as an alchemist, which you probably unbeknown to yourself, that's what you exactly are, and we apply the alchemy with different variations. And when that Pandora's box opens, lots of good and bad comes out of it.
Yeah.
Because I almost felt like the, you know, Merlin's assistant, the old Mickey Mouse in the bucket for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's water everywhere. The half glass is spilling everywhere, mate. Come on, mate, get the water. It's flooding the place. And, you know, and Merlin comes back with forgiveness and what have you. And I think that Merlin is, you know, realising that, you know, I came head first to this world for a vagina.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, mother, you know, that whole aspect of the sign of life and every living component.
Yeah.
That sign can't be fucked with, that DNA. And, you know, I realise that the muse of the universe is kind of a feminine and male and effeminate, but mainly a feminine, so giving birth to everything. And I find, you know, the yoga's been the process. And I'm realising even more now that after 7 years of Bikram, I'm now, you know, like 15 classes into Vinyasa, and I've started with Gilchrist, who's just an absolute fucking G, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the whole thing with, you know, you're going to India and do stuff, and he's been there, done that, and everything else. But, you know, we sat with him, and it's kind of yoga brand, yo gangster, which I really love the aspect of, you know, yeah, it's yoga. No one thought of the word yoga anster.
Yeah.
It's the kind of people, don't associate the words with gangster. How can you do that? Guys, my life's been a parody. You understand that whole aspect of, you know, James Cagney, go get it, Ma. Top of the world, Ma.
Yeah.
But I want to get it in the right way, so I'm using the positive energy by flipping over what gangster means. Hello, Preed, with yoga. Hello.
Yeah.
Da-da. Sorry, don't go and see stand-up comedy, because you won't get it.
Yeah.
You certainly won't. In that aspect of what Yo Gangster is, we've got a lot of backing with that aspect of me. You know, you've got Ben Sears out of Yoga Lux, and you've got the guys from New York. You know, and Gilchrist ain't no joke. He thought, I love this idea because you don't remember me, do you? And what do you mean? He went, I sold pills in Blue Night every week.
Damn.
And this is a guy that would get smashed every week. He said, the music saved me.
Yeah.
And then he starts going, Universe, Plumstead, you know, all of the raves you can think of that were any raves should be doing anything.
Yeah.
Solaris, you name it. Fantasia, bam. Tape packs, bam. Everything he knows. He was there.
Yeah.
In the fields. And then the club came, and then Talvin Singh had the Monday Night Club in Camden, remember?
Right.
And it would go all weekend.
Yeah.
Burning like a comet.
Yeah.
On his way home on a Monday night after the club, he'd jump over a wall. Note to self, council has just done some construction work and the landing pad is not there anymore. Fell 60 feet, broke his spine in four places.
God damn.
Found a vinyasa teacher in South London in his rehab, African woman.
Yeah.
Never looked back.
Yeah.
He's been teaching for 23 years with yoga.
Amazing. Again, so, something that he's found by accident, but it turns out, and it, again, it feels
beautiful.
Similar. The passion with which you seem to take upon Yogang or yoga and Yogangster, it feels like the perfect substitute for those nights and days of pushing yourself to the limit in clubs, and not necessarily in a good way. Whereas now it's pushing yourself to that limit and finding those same highs potentially and those same plateaus, but in a positive way.
There's a blue residue.
Yeah,
there is a blue residue with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
and we wonder why people sometimes in those positions gravitate towards that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and they come from that. You know, you're dabbling with the arts.
Yeah,
and there's a price to be paid for that sometimes. And we lose some people.
Yeah.
And we gain some people, but we realise that we have to manage. I have to manage my addiction.
Yeah.
You know, 36 years now. You know what I mean? I was 16 and a half, 17. I was 17 in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 35. But, you know, the yoga and the serotonin and the release and the way of getting yourself into a kind of a state, if you like. I always say to people, you know, if I take away, fast forward 44 minutes and rewind 40. 4 minutes. If that was a drug for that 1 minute in the middle, and you hadn't had to do this yoga to get to that point of how high it is,
yeah,
what would you pay for that gear?
Yeah, to get straight
because,
there.
Because this is the thing, most drugs that you do, barring acid,
yeah,
you know, I remember first doing cocaine, is that, what's supposed to happen?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say who it is, but somebody went, yeah, well, nothing really, you just end up talking like a super lawyer.
Yeah.
You imagine you're a lawyer. And you're a super lawyer.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up talking a lot of shit.
Let's start a business.
So, and then you realise with yoga, listen, it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
If yoga was in the shelves and you could buy it in a can, and it was called incentive, yeah, the shelves would be empty.
It's a beautiful thing because it's something that takes a discipline that is lost a lot in society these days. And I was talking to this about this with Sophia Batella, and there was... can't think who it was. I think it was Socrates back in the day. If you studied under Socrates, you weren't allowed to ask a question for 3 years.
Wow.
Because you had to... felt that you weren't at a level that you were worthy of questioning yet.
Wow.
For 3 years. And the patience in that is something that's lost. So a similar thing here of going, right, it's not just a pill you take and it happens. It's something that you develop and get to, but it means it's all the more rewarding when you finally get there, right?
It is, but it's a thing where... it's also getting you ready, like, you know, I think the thing that clicked with Gilchrist for me, being a bit of a G, is it's a yoga outside of the room. I have to work on being a better person, and I'm probably a better version of myself now. But I look at hydrogen, I look at water, I look at Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's remember who killed the electric car, right? What a great documentary.
Right.
You know, that's a shocking documentary, in fact. When you think about it, it's blatant.
Yeah.
Oh, have you not seen
it? No.
Who killed the electric car was when... those big companies in America, not naming them, you'll see for yourself, took the electric car, made it, and they went, shit, this is a bad idea, we're going to lose out on the gas.
Yeah.
Let's destroy it. And a really famous actor, I'm not going to say who invented it, had kind of bought it, but the small print said that the company can take it back at any time.
Right.
They stacked them, thousands of them in Arizona, stacked them up.
Oh, wow.
When we talk about conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They stacked them, took them, confiscated them back.
Yeah.
Big hoo-ha. Crushed them. They crushed the electric car.
It's insane.
And now, it's all about turn. Because they didn't want it. It was a big thing in the government. They really... some big Texan went, no. We need to kill this car because it's electric. Yeah. It's dangerous for us. Dangerous. So, I look at that now and I think, well, yeah, electricity. It's great, that thing. How we're charged with water.
Yeah.
And electric. We have an electric motor. And we're charged with water.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of going back to the basic principles of that. And just the whole process of writing, you know, was charged in a clarity this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of a real design, layers and layers and layers, to the point where there's 3 CDs and the last one is just instrumentals where once the voice is removed and I bring up the chord arrangements, can they hear the skin layer between the onion skin? The thin membrane layers start to get heard.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it was more, it's more, it's a direct, it's direct, it's my first, it's my directorial debut.
It feels like from everything you've said here and what we were discussing before we started rolling even, that it's a record that has taken you these 20 years or whatever to get to. And
couldn't have done it before.
It feels to me like things like when you were suddenly given or the opportunity to work with an orchestra to do Timeless and then suddenly start going, all right, hang on, we can make these greater arrangements, and these things that I maybe made subconsciously in my bedroom back in the day, there's something greater at work here, and this can be a bigger and grander thing. And it feels like the realization of all of that then gives you the confidence to go, well, there was more at hand in the first place than me. I didn't realise it at the time. At the time, I thought, you probably thought, shit, I've just innovated a whole thing here. Look at me. But then breaking it up and working with orchestras and stuff, going, wow, there was more there than even I knew myself. Therefore, it opens you up.
That's bang on the money. And the reason why that's bang on the money is because the subconscious is very powerful.
Hugely.
And we're tapping into it in different ways. But I was before I left, it was weird because I'd already had this studio that became like a bit of a shrine that I'd never really used. I've done like 8 studio albums in between. They never really were what they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm nurturing the label, which I've been nurturing for 20 years. I've been all the other kids through and everything else and whatever.
100%.
And then I just, I kind of I packed everything up. I was never going to come back to this place.
Yeah.
I packed it all and went. I gave all my shit away. I mean, I literally, it was 18 months before I opened any crates.
Wow.
And went, what? Why did I ship this shit here? Why the fuck did you ship all this rubbish here?
Yeah.
You don't even need it. So I gave all the stuff to the Burmese camps.
Wow.
All my... A lot of fucking Burmese walking around some serious vintage these days, isn't it?
I bet, man.
I mean, I kept my cream. Yeah. I kept the cream, but a lot of it.
Yeah.
And then I just... We built this place, and in the heart of the house, I got this railway sleepers on the floor, which is really beautiful. And it's a root of a tree, a really big tree that had been there for 200 years, which came down last year. And weirdly enough, I wrote a letter to this tree. And that's a true story. I found the land. Couldn't believe I found this place. The guy that found it is now dead. He was a heroin overdose. It was crazy.
Right.
And it was all collapsed. It was never going to happen. I'd found this other place and it fell through. And then somebody says, but you do realise through those trees there's a clearing and another guy's there who's a big fan of yours. I'm like, nah. An Australian guy, it's a big day out. Can you believe that?
Wow.
So I'd actually went there in the evening at sundown and wrote a letter to this tree and put it inside the tree. Came back to England and the last bit of my kind of divorce and all this other stuff had happened. You know, all these bits and pieces had happened, and I had to sell a house very quickly.
Yeah.
And I had like 2 weeks to go.
Wow.
And I begged, borrowed, and stole, and one of my friends, Gary from Adidas, really helped me out.
Yeah.
He helped me out. He said, look, man, I'm going to help you out here. And my sister, Gussie's daughter, Gus Cole's daughter. And I managed to secure it, and then we built this place. It's a fucking 5-year plan.
Damn.
Two and a half years to build, all of a sudden a phone call comes from nowhere, and it's a guy called David Church, and he goes, I've got to get his voice is funny.
Yeah.
Goldie, I hear you're going to Thailand and I want to build your studio because I've done 670 studios since I first built your studio, and I got a lot of work on the back of that, so I want to come to Thailand. And I went, well, what do you want? He went, I want nothing. I've not had a holiday for a long time. If you buy the materials, I will go. So
amazing.
I booked a flight for him.
Amazing.
My mate called Ryan, who's from Blackburn, who lives around the corner, who's the biggest Metalheads fan ever.
Brilliant, yeah.
Lives 200 metres from me, unbeknown to me.
Insane.
And actually now manages my house on my way, and then picks the guy at the airport, goes and gets all the stuff, and he stays and builds his studio. So I arrive in Thailand to this finished house, go downstairs, and it's a studio, ready to go.
Yeah.
Which I put the picture on the album cover, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
And just went, it was already in my subconscious to go, I'm gonna make another album. Because I'd always felt that Thomas was never really surpassed from the drum and bass scene anyway.
Yeah, completely.
I felt it was, and it's, you know, it was a kind of...
It's aptly named, man.
But I just felt I wasn't surpassed. And I think if anyone was going to do that, or the audacity to even put it on the level or par, you know, get on par with that.
Yeah.
Not par it off, but get on par with it.
Yeah.
So do that. And I think, you know, Thomas feels like a really beautiful redskin girl who was young and exuberant, but she became jaded.
Mm-hmm.
She became black under the eyes. She became a drug addict. And she started sleeping out on the street. And she had a pram that had a beautiful child in it, which was drum and bass.
Yeah.
But it became a remedial in a fucking wheelchair.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, hang on a minute, I've seen that child walk before. This is a lot of bollocks.
Yeah.
And I think that the big brother came along and just shook the girl and said, look, just go and have a fucking bath.
Yeah.
Soak it off. Slap that kid in a pram. Get him out of the fucking wheelchair. I've seen you walk. Go to fuck home. Take your ball. Go and fucking fix up. And then come back to me because you're a young, aspiring young man. You're not a fucking remedial.
Yeah.
And I feel that, like any genre, I feel that it's been chastised and copped out by gentrification.
Yeah.
As always, with anything.
So has it taken you some time to see the beauty that was spawned there? Again, it's always easy to notice the negativity of things
always,
that come.
I always knew the beauty was there, but I always felt like I was the only one in the gang fucking getting shot to pieces.
Right, yeah.
I feel Ronnie helped me out with Brown Paper Bag. It's a fucking good album, and I think Groove Rider's album was underrated.
Yeah.
It was just, and I think for the amount of, for something like Graffiti, which has inspired the world in font and everything to do with anyone wearing a baseball cap and fucking sneakers, 100%. At its centre of wild style, it is still misunderstood.
Yeah.
But give me a bubble letter and put it on a T-shirt and write Banksy on it and we're sorted. We're okay, we're good.
Yeah, we can sell it now.
We can sell it. We can make it something else.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Robert. I think he's a brilliant artist. I think he's flipped it, the world of art, over.
Yeah, completely.
But I think what... the irony in that... if jazz, as a genre, did the same thing as what drum and bass has done with music, there'd be 236,000 Kenny G's and one really angry Miles Davis.
Yeah.
Because you have the greats with jazz. You have Sonny Rollins, Miles Davis. You have all these greats.
Yeah.
All great, solid oaks. Solid, solid oaks. Drum and bass, let's just give it to the kids.
Yeah, it feels like it's when something becomes so... or becomes taken out of somewhere where it is about the art and the root, and it just becomes a thing. It becomes a label. I used to do a lot of stenciling, and the day I stopped was the day I went to one of my pieces and someone had written, "Fuck Banksy." And I was like... right, now stenciling is just Banksy. Because he got so big, and rightfully so, because some of his pieces were iconic. But because of that, I was like, I've no interest in doing this anymore, because now it's just, it's not stencil art anymore, it's just Banksy. It's what everyone feels like it's ripping off and doing the same thing, and it becomes this mass-marketed thing. And so it can be similar in every art form. Graffiti is the perfect example that someone, there will be a marketing exec that goes, oh, we could do with a graffiti thing for this. It's like, well, you know, graffiti is like saying we could do with some music. You know, graffiti is so broad and wide and different, but it becomes just a thing that's added, a product, a label.
I also think that, you know, I'm part of TAS. I've been part of TAS. They put me under the wing in, you know, for 30 years deep.
Right.
And TAS crew just got given, you know, the key to New York City. And they were, think about what it's been through and the Bronx is on fire.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think drum and bass. I kind of wanted to remind people.
Yeah.
Because even though the album is 16 tracks, there's 9 drum and bass records.
Yeah.
And there's 7 D&B and there's 7 Muso excursions.
Yeah.
But you're so not going to call it a drum and bass album because it's completely like, it's like this. I show you where the radio, and I'm going to hold your hands out and show you the sleight of hand magic. No one's going to see this.
Yeah. I'm just going to push.
And that's what we did. I think Thomas did the same thing.
Yeah.
Because it was presented. And it was like a new genre.
Yeah.
It's like, but 7, 8 of those tracks had been previously done 5 years earlier.
Right.
Chemistry.
Yeah.
Fury was part of the one-on-one series of... I just re-put it, packaged it. It was like, here's what it is. This album was all new work. Thomas is brilliant, and I get it. I understand it, you know, but you guys have to understand. Cut me some slack. I'm the artist. I know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the purse fight, isn't it?
Did you know at the time, or was it something that was kind of, oh, I've got to put together some bits from the past? Like, was it a complete vision at the time?
Totally. I knew Thomas was really going to be Thomas. I knew it already. It's an outline, it's graph. I'm a writer. I knew that was going to be outline.
Yeah.
We did one long piece, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that, and it's going to be 3 sections. Initial life, pressure, and jar.
Yeah.
Because I got that from the sound system. Cool. Sensual, okay, Haze. Beverly Knight, Beverly Hill, Beverly Mays. Cool. Bam. Okay, got that.
Yeah.
Sensual. The beginning. I love my MTV. Martin Knopfler. People would never ever put that together.
Yeah.
I love my MTV. Sensual. That's where it came from.
Amazing.
Directly.
Yeah,
so people understand the archetypes of the weaving of whatever.
Yeah.
The difference with this is that that was 10 years of adolescence. Yeah. This is a bad. Coming back with Randall in a night time.
Right.
Coming back through the city. And this is so fucking bad.
Yeah.
This is the bad. This is the fucking dark night. This is the bad.
Yeah.
But the journey man is 35 years of musical fucking heritage and history. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, because I've got Mad Mike in my vision here. And I said to Mike, yo, Mike, man. Mike said, you got to work with this guy, man. We're in Outlook Festival. You got to work with this kid, John Dixon. Got rained out 4 years ago. They couldn't play. Undergravity just turned up. They couldn't fucking play. In the airport minibus, we're going back. And this guy's like, you got to work with this kid.
Your phone's interrupted.
Look at this. My web search turned something up for history of Mike. Mike, you're now a man. Go to work, please. Game me and go to work. X rained out for you. Have a look. That is a random message.
That's technology. That's your phone just jumping in going, well, hey, I think I can help you here.
That's, yeah, that's kind of like what, you know, when you spill the milk in that thing, you get Pastor Louis Pasta. Hello. We have a computer version. Yeah. This shit speaks to me all the time. I always do this sometimes. I go, Siri, can you give me a blowjob? Siri, can you give me a blowjob?
I'm doing my best.
See? He tries to help.
At least he's trying. At least he's putting...
So the process of that, I'm going to try to push... I can't comment it apart from being, one, the Soundseek method.
Yeah.
In this particular aspect. And two, the concertina effect, which is my approach to music, because I don't engineer and refuse to engineer, is that I've always looked over the shoulder of some other guy when this shit was going vertically in black and white.
Yeah.
It's called Creator. Mark and Digo, my two Miyagis, if you like. From Dolly Seals. So I've refused to do that because of a fear of... I was to retain technical information and lose it very quickly. Dissipates. Yeah. I can't remember. Right. I can't. I just cannot have the capacity.
Yeah.
I'm in a constance of stuff. But I remember my auntie's cooking, the smell of the cake.
Right.
Or pussy into my fingernails the first time I fingered Angela Horner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I have a different setup, which is kind of based on Proust, I guess, in that sense, of what that is.
Yeah.
And realising that's the human aspect. And I think... So I just kind of set it upright. I knew that the studio was built, getting back to the point. I felt that the album had been surpassed. And I felt, are you ready for your magnus opus? And I asked the universe, and she says, yeah, I'll give you as much fanny as you like and download as much orgasmic aspects you want. Just be clear and be a good boy and don't fuck around and just be clear with the art. Because you've had this chance before and you fucked it up. Because, you know, Mother was a difficult period for me. Mother's still the tragic opera in my life, and it always will be. It's a beautiful tragic opera, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mother's tragic, you know, it's a tragic piece.
Yeah.
But still the most powerful piece I've ever made, an hour-long classicist impressionism, orchestral and drum and bass. And maybe people always say to me, well, what's the drum and bass about this? Like, it's an hour long. Well, if you zoom in, you fuckface, into 3 minutes in the middle of 48 minutes, thereabouts, you hear a drum bass record that runs for 5 minutes. If you like to edit, you've got a computer, you can edit, right? You can edit, can't you? Go ahead, knock yourself out. So when people say to me, I had one scumbag of a guy that said to me last week, and he's got to me, this album, Jane, why so long? It's called fucking Spotify, you knob. If you want Spotify, just do Spotify.
Yeah.
If you want to fast forward...
Yeah.
Cool, fast forward. Why would you ask me why so long? You don't go to a novel artist who writes novels after, you know, writing mundane articles in a magazine. You just now written a novel and go, why so long?
It's one of those weird things of when you're someone who is so attached to a genre and to launching a genre, is they're then looking at you as drum and bass rather than at your body of work. You've always made huge epic tracks, long stuff, all over the place, whereas they think, well, Goldie, he made drum and bass, right? He's the pioneer of drum and bass. What's going on here? It's like, well...
Yeah, you get that.
Every record's had that, right? You've always done that. You've always gone big.
I felt that this was loaded in so many ways that... We spoke about the escalator. If any of you have been following this, because I don't actually know how to follow myself sometimes. No full stops. We spoke about the escalator in Barcelona airports, because they got a lot of them.
Yeah.
And in Schiphol as well. They, you know, flat escalators where you walk on and if it's not working, you really feel fucked.
I think we were talking about that before we started recording,
I'll fill that in on that. It's a little bit like the way that I look at this album and the way that you process it. As a long player...
Mm-hmm.
35 years of influence in my life is going to have to be quite a big project.
Yeah.
So I've had to load everything up in the subconscious and rely on the deities, if you like, of raising the deities in very clear water. Me being a salmon swimming upstream all the time against the water, realising once I got to this plateau that was quite still, I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute, it's a bit too comfortable for me, which is the yoga, which is like, hang on a minute, I'm all right here. You know what I mean? If I want to jump back down a few streams and get in the kind of torrent, if you like, again.
Yeah.
But you've got to understand the stillness a little bit.
The yoga forces you to acknowledge that you're right. Not just keep going in case something happens. No, you've got to just take in everything for this moment.
Take it in.
It's fine. It's fine.
Appreciate this.
And then you can keep going if you want, but you're going because you're choosing to go.
But I also realise, on a daily basis, man, and I really mean this.
Yeah.
that sometimes just before I go to sleep, I think I'm going to pass. I'm not going to be here.
Right.
This cell, it's like fucking gone. Mm-hmm. And when I wake up, I'm like, shit, this is the first day of the last day of my life. It's the first day of the rest of my life now.
Yeah.
You know, this is it. And I really kind of value that a lot. And I spoke to Raponchi about it because it was fucking driving me mad for a fucking long time.
Yeah.
And he said, I think it's because you have a fear of not dying. You have a fear that you've not done enough in life.
Right.
That's usually. And I feel that I haven't. I don't feel I've done anything. I feel like greatness is Da Vinci. Greatness is Miles.
Mm-hmm.
Greatness is like, you know, a person that composed for orchestra, that couldn't afford an orchestra to play it, but in his mind's eye has created an unfucking believable piece of tapestry.
Yeah.
We've got buttons to press and we're giving ourselves the biggest fucking cockwank thinking it was special.
Yeah, that's what I don't like.
So I think I'm only trying to do the best work I can do or being the best possible version of myself.
Yeah.
By thinking, if it's just about pushing buttons and me manipulating in the seancic method, the engineer, namely James Davison, who's one of my artists on the label from Ulterior Motive, who's fucking absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be passing in the street with a pair of glasses on. He's like a kind of really good-looking Carl Pilkington.
Yeah.
He really is. Sorry, James.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to do this project. We're going to start with Prism. Why Prism? Well, Prism's because, you know, it's kind of the origami of my mind. It starts as an opaque kind of folded piece of paper that opens up and it gets more prismatic, hexagonoid, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The sides can become abstract and it goes outside my head and we expand it in the concertina and we expand it and we expand it and we expand it and then it's the universe.
Yeah.
How do you do that in a record? Well, I'm going to give you this program that I think is really good that I've used many, many years ago that no one seems to know about, and I'm going to play around with this idea of expanding and moving sound in such a way.
Yeah.
Which is Prism, you know, because all of this light's coming in and it's all coming out. That's what Graffiti Wise learned very early on.
Here's an outline.
Now we technicolor.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've kind of used this prismatic idea of just asking for the light at the right moment.
Yeah.
Before it burns me.
Do you know what I mean?
And I kind of use that technique throughout the whole process, but starting with Prism, which is really weird.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think it's going to be weird you listening to this backwards, which is good.
No one's done that.
And just enjoying it.
Yeah.
Because it was 5 years of an idea. It's kind of moving around.
Yeah.
And it's 2 years in a black book. Oh, the sketches. Okay, so that's going to... So I need that track's going to do that. Okay, back to the point. Mad Mike. Where was I? Didn't finish it. Mad Mike Van. Work with this guy.
Yeah.
I play him Latin Skin. I play him some other bass. And he's like, oh, my God. It sounds like Matheny. I'm like, did you just say Matheny? Because I don't know any black guy that likes Matheny like I like Matheny. Taught me everything I know about arrangement. He's like, oh my God, I'm his biggest fan. I'm like, well, okay, we're going to do this. So he's about 12 demos. Three of them blew my mind. One was a 48-minute piano improv.
Yeah.
48 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stop. 8 bars there, take that. 16 bars there. 32 there. 2 there. I'll take these ones at the beginning. I'll have those. So I just photographed everything and placed it in an arrangement window. And I said to this guy, I'm like, you know, I'm chopping this fucking piano to pieces. Have you not got the fucking MIDI? Because I just played it.
Mm.
I could hear he just played his heart out in his room. Yeah. He was in a room just playing his heart out.
It's the beauty of playing for that long, but then also aware that he's just creating snapshots.
It's
not going to be a 48-minute thing. It's going to be a tiny bit here,
This is the beauty of it. Because he didn't know, unbeknownst, he did this like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
He was in a room on the top of his A-game. Didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
Just playing.
Yeah.
My job has always been, as a director, man, just to photograph the art.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I remember Noel saying it on Temper Temper. It's like, I'm saying to Rob, just fucking press record, man, because he's just rehearsing. Mate, note to self, when a fucking musician starts rehearsing, that's when you need to be fucking
just get
recording.
Going, yeah, man.
So anyway, he, you know, Noel did this ridiculous take and he didn't fucking get it. I'm like, mate, you need to fucking, that's what you need to. Anyway, he plays his piece. I've got this piece now in my head already. Two particular notes just make me just go up that hill. up that hill. Okay, that's what it's going to be. Okay, it's just going to be up that hill. All right? Yeah, we built a house on a hill. I live on a hill. Yeah. We live on a hill. Up that hill. But you got to go down again. You got to go back up again. Okay, but you got to... What have you been doing now? Well, oh, God, all these shades in here. So all of... Yeah, all of life's shades. All of life's shades and meadows. What kind of man am I? Yeah, all of life's shades and meadows. What kind of man am I, the man the hill made? Bingo. We're off. We're off to the races. Okay, so melodically, I can hear the piano. And the piano goes. And I've got this section of the piano in the middle, which seems like time travel time.
Right.
This piece of the piano is now going to... Now, how do we make a 3-hour David Lean film? How do we bring it down?
Yeah.
How can we do what Ridley does? Well, you don't want narration because it's really shitty. So let the music give you time. Yeah. Give you an essence of time.
Yeah.
Going through it. And there's a beautiful Christian piece on the end of it. It's just very, very beautiful. And lyrically, I've just been writing so much. There's this kid called Tyler Daly from Manchester.
Right.
Who's a fucking genius.
Yeah.
Part of Children of Zeus. Him and a guy called Connie. Young Stevie, please. Prince, please. I mean, this kid's voice, man.
Really?
Well, on one of the records, it was really funny. I played it to a friend of mine, which is a love song duet with a girl from Australia, Sydney, called Naomi Pryor, and Tyler from Manchester, because I always wanted to do the cassette tape that had the love song that was repeated, that you get away with some bird in your flat. You know, when your people's gone out for the first time.
Yeah,
Pussy
yeah,
Time
yeah,
for the
yeah.
first time.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of, you know, for me it was Sade.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? She's responsible.
Yeah.
For so many babies.
Yeah.
So I wanted to reproduce a duet, you know, which is kind of like Alexander O'Neill, Sherelle. You know, how do you look a slow jam though? Because I love slow jams. So to describe that, Eddie, I'm going to make an interview, I'll call you back. To describe. If you say graffiti, all these colours, pink, green, fuchsia, all that on that one piece, car crash, right?
Yeah.
Graffiti advised don't think like that. So, love song, duet, girl, guy, never met, love song, on a slow jam record, on a Goldie album, that's going to sound really bad.
Yeah.
Tearful, exuberant, beautiful piece. And it's very personal because he's lyrically, you know, from Tokyo to Guangzhou, we smoothed it out and then some.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's about what those records were about. But going back to the point, all of that with Run, 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 being 47 piano improv to 5.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I then spent 3 months writing the song.
Yeah.
Because I knew that it would be the end piece, but it was also going to be the epilogue. But it will also be where I'm at. But it will also be the theatre. Because the album is like cinematography.
Yeah.
And you get 15 tracks. And because, for me, the thing of, how can you just got to be relentless? Track one, track two, track three. Now, this is where it all falls apart. But let's make track 4, 5, and 6 really strong. So when track 7 comes along, it's even stronger. To track 8, which tops track 7. To track 9, which is like, it's got to fucking explode! You know, and then when it gets to 8, you think, fucking, that's all done. That's it. There's no way. He's got nowhere to go here.
Yeah.
We've got him in a corner. He's fucked. First 4 tracks on CD2. Then we change him. So Mad Mike. We keep getting back to Mad Mike.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do a drum bass record to turn into a techno record. So I decided, well, I've got a 21-minute version, but if you make it 21 minutes, they're only going to compare it to Timeless.
Yeah.
It's not. So let me do an 18.5-minute version.
Yeah.
Bit thinner, and let me ask Mike, can I use High Tech Jazz in the middle, please? It'd be an honor, he said. So I took High Tech Jazz, which is one of the greatest techno records of all time.
Yeah,
I've never made a techno record, so I thought, here's the time to do it. So I got John Dixon playing keys on the drum bass part, which makes it very, very kind of Sun Ra.
Yeah,
and then I kind of have this aspect of fucking with people's minds in time, so it's 1-7-2, which turns into 1-2-7. Where does it turn into 1-2-7? Work it out. You're not going to work it out. It's clever.
Yeah.
So it turns into a techno record, so it goes through 3 movements of vocal as well. You get the intro soul, then you get Chicago Has, then you get Church.
Yeah.
And then you get jazz at the end.
Yeah.
So I kind of really designed it all But going back to the point when Mike's, you know, working with John Dixon.
Yeah.
The one run in particular, I then say to Tyler, I kept recording all of the vocals and sending him a line at a time. He said, gee, man, I'm confused. I don't know where you're... Where's it all going, man? I'm like, don't worry about that. This is theatre. Because you know, sometimes in theatre, the theatre... We're opening next week, and the script's the end of the theatre's not even finished yet. Yeah, you know, that's always the case.
Yeah, yeah.
So I basically finished it, and then I knew it was going to come. Because I trusted, you know, Mother Earth. I've trusted it.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, a week later, all of the lines all cut. Oh. I did one take, and it was called Wow, 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 and an email sent... It was one take from bar zero to the end. And he went, yeah. I get it. It's theatre. It's a story of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the kind of very naked piece. It's a very, very naked. Right at the very, very end.
Right.
Let's move all the fucking effects and everything else away. Let's have a guy with a piano and a string.
Yeah.
Bearing his fucking soul.
It feels like throughout this, there seems to be a theme of stuff that... If you write it down, or again, it's a film. You go into a meeting and you pitch it. What are you talking about? Just let me go and do it. You go and do it and then present it and go, here it is. And it feels like, number one, you need to get to the point that you are in your life and career for people to allow you to just, or to be able to be in a position to just go away and just go, look, just trust me. It'll work. But also you need to be in a place within yourself to trust yourself on that, to go, this is going somewhere, this is going to make sense in the end, rather than, fuck, I'm going to spend years and years and then it's going to turn out that it was
because of the aspects of pre-Hoffman, there was always sabotage.
Yeah.
When I got to the very top of everything, you know, I was doing Mother and Tom Madonna's go fuck yourself, I'm not doing it, I'm not doing your album. Come to LA, I'm going to fly you in and we're going to do it. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm doing Mother.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through it. I'm not doing it. I got crucified for Mother.
Yeah.
But that's just that thing in my ear whispering, going, you've got to do this. It's the art. You've got to do this. It's the art. You have to do this. And of course, when she died and I played it to her in the Chapel of Rest, then it all made sense to me.
Right.
It served a purpose.
That's massive, yeah.
It served a purpose with my mother in that room. Because it wasn't her in that room. It was a carcass that was marble with skin stretched over it to be presentable to the family.
Yeah.
She was no longer there.
Yeah.
But I played an hour-long piece in that room and cried like I've never cried before and finally freed myself from that thing. So...
That's a beautiful thing because it's one thing to create and create and create, but as soon as you've got a name or an audience, there's going to be an assumption on your part and the part of others that what you're creating... is for them, is for this purpose, is for that purpose.
It's not at all. When I'm totally self-indulgence.
Yeah.
I'm totally selfish with all of this.
And again, it's you may not have realised until that point purpose was for Mother.
I'm going to be really honest, though. I've thrown stones at people about this shit. I don't give a fuck. I really do not give a fuck.
Yeah.
And with your fucking criticism and all the bollocks, you know, one person says something. I'd be down the office, usually.
Yeah.
I'd be in the office. I'd root them out and I'd find them.
Yeah.
I'd pull them out of the office. I've done it before. I don't really care anymore.
Yeah.
Because most of the people that do that, one, have a day job, don't really get out much, live safely in the confines of a computer, and they've never really been on a demonstration march when the police strangled a mate of yours in the cold of winter.
Yeah.
They've never really seen an estate on fire. They never really see your mum fucking to get your food.
Yeah.
So I don't really hear it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I ain't got time for it. What I do realise is that, you know, I lost a dear friend, Marcus Intellects, last week. 46, man.
Wow.
In the bath, dead.
Damn, that's terrible.
Plaque on the arteries. The legacy, what he's left behind in the music, is fucking scary.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just what the purpose is, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to hear about Maninoff Remix 1746. All my own music to be conducted.
Yeah.
All my own music to be the blueprint of what the 90s were into the noughties.
Yeah.
Because I have enough of it. And I just feel that this project, it has been a great film.
Mm.
And it's like I can see the credits rolling and I'm like, thank you. I've done it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that I'll never do another album like this ever again.
I was going to say, is that what this feels like? Does this feel like the end scene? Of everything that's been the journey of gold.
It's totally the end scene, And now I'm going to direct the movie Timeless I always said I was going to do.
Yeah.
Because I kept barking about it, but with very little bite.
Yeah.
For good reason. Yeah. I wasn't ready. I'm glad that I never, you know, if I would have gone to America and done Madonna's album, I'm in a hotel room, like Spectre, mate, with a fucking needle in my arm.
Yeah.
I would have shot that fucker in the head. I know what would have happened.
Yeah.
Because I was just too weak.
Yeah.
I can conceptualise my own music, but I'm fucking with alchemy, man.
Mm.
Alchemy burns, man. You know, yeah, what I mean? That's it's a, all that energy. I think now it's realising that, you know, there is that aspect of it. And I think doing this piece of work, I just feel such peace because, you know, the Qigong in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, go to yoga, come back, talk about the book and the film. You know, talk about, just go off on one. Like, I'm lying in a boat, in the bottom of my house, in the bottom of the house, right? So we're in the bottom of our house and there's railway sleepers and there's like a boat, like a Thai boat with cushions mm-hmm. made into a sofa. And I'm lying down, looking at the root of a tree. And I'm just talking to the fucking rocking chair next to me that's empty.
Yeah.
Just recording, lying down like I'm a fucking having therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, Lee Scratch, I get it. We can put stuff on top of your head.
Yeah.
That's my own fucking way of dealing with it. And I love it.
Yeah.
And I don't care if I'm mad as a box of fucking frogs with it because it gets me the belief system that I need.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck if it's not real?
And does it feel like it's been a path or a journey of gradual realisation as well? Because it feels like you've always been someone who's very headstrong, who wants to do this, who has a very defined vision. But as you can look back now, at times, you weren't ready for that vision at that point, and you weren't ready for that vision at that point. So it has to be that gradual realizing that the music isn't for that guy in the office who's misrepresented and misunderstood. At the time, you probably felt, fuck that guy. I want to, as you said, throw rocks at that guy. But the realization will then be potentially that, right, it was never for him. It doesn't matter who that guy is. It doesn't matter. It was never for him. It was for something that you then learned far later on in life.
Yeah.
You know?
He sees, like, I mean, Skeptic said to me the other day, he went, you know, I mean, I can't even go to the fucking shop and get a fucking donut without. And I'm like, that's, you signed up for this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's about.
Yeah.
So it's about creating a space to get a fuck out.
Yeah. Go
and build a fucking house in the middle of fucking nowhere. You won't deal with that. And I think, you know, he's not a spring chicken, but I'm just thinking that is where you need to be at.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd do that, because we're born on the same day, and he got a bit shocked by that. And I'm like, right. I know your next fucking move.
It's the same thing.
You're going to be on tour, you get tired, you got a lot of fucking hangers on, you're going to get a lot of all that shit, you're going to see expensive tours, then you're going to start looking tired, then you're going to, what the fuck am I doing with this shit? And then you're going to be like, oh, and by that time you think, oh shit, it's another nigga next year.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out, get a house, do it, and then come back into it, because you can't think like that. You've got to think, you know, driven by the street, driven me to go to New York.
Yeah.
To find better streets.
Mm-hmm.
Darker streets, but better in the sense of what I learned from them streets. To come back into the UK.
How big a jump was that from the Midlands, on, I guess, the Midlands?
Come on, Stanton's fucking cake shop.
Yeah.
From Stanton's cake shop in the Midlands before you had Greg's, mate.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To go into the Bronx that was on fire, where I'm going to a guy's tenement yard, five floors up, that's got two Rockwilers, a metal door, and fucking two Mac-10s and fucking standing there with Uzi's packing
that?
Like
80s? 84. When New York was, when the Bronx was the Bronx.
84.
Fully.
Yeah. And I'm sitting in there while the guy's cutting up fucking blow.
Yeah.
And I'm cutting in silver paper, and I'm just gonna get, I'm getting fucking smashed and wired. I'm looking at a fucking Futura piece in a park and sitting there smoking on a zoot, thinking, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I'm never gonna die. I'm gonna live forever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So.
Big changes to then return to then bring back change.
I think Jesus was just a geezer that had lots of insight from a chick. I think all the chicks we've ever had, we've tried to burn them all.
Yeah.
You know, all the witches, if she drowns, she's not a witch. If she lives, kill her. You know, we've always, I think, having, you know, embracing the effeminate and looking at all of that stuff and, you know, how amazing the street was, kind of university, but the street corner became, the hustle was the man, the game, the gear, get smashed, fuck it up, sell. Even if you, listen, you can go, you know, I'm going to donate some money to a fucking kid's school, but I'm going to go sell some rocks in this fucking kid here right up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then the effeminates, the graffiti, the rapping, the spitting, the breakdancing,
yeah,
the art. Has anyone seen Stance Elements? These fucking guys collating the best breakdancing shit in the fucking world.
Right.
Like, how the fuck you defy gravity and yet you cannot get a stance in the Olympics? Are you buzzing?
Yeah.
Are you nut?
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a lot of axes to grind in various aspects to do with what b-boyism, which should be a word in the dictionary.
Yeah, yeah.
B-boyism.
Yeah.
A word that creates the culture, the hood that we both have an engine underneath, that we're part of.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
And what do you define it with? Do you go to the four elements? Do you?
I go to the four elements of rap. Yeah, all of that. I also look at Sun Ra.
Yeah.
The elements of, you know, yeah, time. He didn't mean that, guys. It's spacecraft. Yeah. Hey, do you know I can get into a sampler and I can go back and forth in time of musical heritage? Do you know I can go find Dandridge? And I can find a recording of Leadbelly. And Cool G Rap and Apollo. Because I'm fly.
Yeah.
And I can go to the future in that sound and create the future because Detroit did that. They showed me, you know, Mad Mike, one of the most powerful things that my Mad Mike's ever said.
Yeah.
Was, yo, man, I've done move three times. The natives keep coming. They keep moving. These natives keep coming. They're moving us along with the capitalism and all that shit. And then the technology back then, that technology, man, they make that shit in Japan, right? All those countries in Germany and whatever, right? They put that shit in the hands of madmen. Like fucking nuclear weapons. I got more machines out of my streets of Detroit. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when you think about, well, they were buying the broken machines.
Yeah.
And fucking with technology. Joyride that shit, man.
Yeah.
Fuck it up. What can it not do? I don't want mixed in key. You fucking buzzing off your nut.
Yeah.
If I want mixed in key, I'll go and listen to a choir in Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
I want angst. I want black notes. I want something between the black notes and the blue notes.
I love it. I love the... Oh, you think this is broken? This isn't broken. This isn't broken. To you, this is to broken. This is to broken. Me, this is to just me, the starting point.
Works.
Yeah.
And because of that, when you understand that technology, they should have been giving them niggas them fucking machines.
Yeah.
Because they know what to fucking do with it. And they made it when he goes, yo, man, that this one machine's out of fucking sync. This one's time clocks another signature. This one's clocks at another time. So that made Detroit fucking techno sound like funk.
Yeah.
And you bring to Germany to make it work exactly at the right time. We must make it work precisely. So it's about dehumanizing that shit.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the process of the album, I spent 3 days in Battery Studios recreating Captain Beefheart.
Yeah.
Recreating Can. Rename some new ones. Mom died. Let's call it Maggie. Maggie 1, Maggie 2. Let's create some new breaks up in here.
Yeah.
Let's now get the percussion and the loose kit and the ambience and all of that shit working. And here's the thing that I really love. This is where my engine starts to get warm. But I'd done it all before in a little way. I'd worked with Mel Gaynor and I went to Trevor Murray's studio in Spain. You know, it was Bjork's drummer. And I went to his, and I recorded stuff and, you know, trying to make him loop stuff up and, you know, putting white noise across the keyboard. So when he's playing, when I cut the sample up and I put it through a Mesa file, then the breaks will already have a thin layer of film on them. Okay, that'll work for me.
Yeah.
So... all that processing, but then, of course, the drugs became so powerful. Some serious Peruvian flake was happening at that time. So yeah. Rick James and that motherfucker just became really strong for me.
Yeah.
So then, of course, with that difficult second album, it falls off. But the process was there. Because, you know, you and me, 48-minute, you know, 48-minute improv. Hang on a minute. Robin Smith played an hour long when he played You and Me. You right. And me will stay together. You and I like all that piano. Dun, 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 dun. That's like an hour-long improv, which I then... cut up and made You and Me and Angel and all the chords for Timeless are within that. You just took the MIDI information. Swap the MIDI information around. What can we make use? Okay, what have we got here? This is okay. Let's get that. You're not supposed to put... Yes, I... For shut up. I'm supposed to put what I want. I can make it work. So I'm just trying to bastardize.
Yeah.
Like shave the nozzle down. Because yeah. when we didn't have Montana, you get the white and you get the red and you shave the nozzle and you... take the fucking pressure from the white, put them together like male and female, shake the cans, so the pressure in the can will go into the lesser pressure of the can, and it'll create pink.
Yeah.
Get those fat laces. You can order them online now. Oxford Street started selling shell toes. Hello? The barbarians from within. Culture of hip-hop.
Yeah.
The barbarians from within will raise their heads and raise the daisies. They'll come back, like the monolith. You know, the fucking the barbarians. They will control the art world as we know it. Joseph Ryker, 1972.
Yeah.
In Italy. So the beginning of bombing, the guy starts speaking, and that's the voice of the critic. And I see that, the barbarians, we know, we, you know, you look at the way that Banksy, we replaced graffiti, replaced the letter form, replaced the Gainsborough picture in the field. The field, the Gainsborough. The cow in the field. Let's remove the cow. Let's take the drummers from the back of a band and put them in the front of a band. Let's make the letter form the central characterization of today's society.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's even gone one further than that. Let's make it symbolism. Because the last time I checked, there was a rectangle box that was red with a white swoosh going through it. That was thick, then it became thin, then it's thick again. I wonder what that is. Because culture, we have to adapt, because capitalism gives it to us.
Yeah.
It gives us, buy this now. Fucking buy it.
Yeah.
Now. And subconsciously, from the 30s, let's just put one frame inside this movie and let's make it a can of Coca-Cola in the film and they won't see it.
Yeah.
It's called subliminal advertising.
Yeah.
Now, that's been happening to us for fucking the last 20 years. Really hardcore.
Yeah.
So you don't want a graffiti writer to react to that?
Yeah.
You don't think that an artist will think, how can I hack that program on that billboard to make it say something else?
Yeah.
How can I fucking get this piece up? Because now it's Big Brother. Welcome, Banksy. Thank you, Banksy, for doing such a great job.
Yeah.
The elusive, the Zorro is back. So I think that this whole aspect, for me, all leads back to, as Nina Simone says, I'm living in a fucking society of fear-mongering.
Yeah.
But if I'm free, I have no fear.
Yeah.
I'm free, man. Or kind of free. I live in Asia. I feel the sand on my feet.
Yeah.
My daughter goes to school with no shoes on. She climbs trees. She does a math lesson in a forest.
Amazing.
So it's a sense of freedom.
Do you feel that freedom has opened you up in all your art? Like you in your painting as well and everything else, to have that, I don't know, in many ways to step out of the pressures and stresses. I mean, you've just today you've been in with the Mayor of London, and there's a lot of shit going on at the moment with elections, with attacks, with everything.
I just sold it like it is. It's like I feel really blessed.
Yeah,
tearfully blessed. Well, I used to think I was going to die very early, a lot.
Yeah,
there's a couple of times I could have gone. I thought, but I feel that. Hopefully this old heart, and the weirdest thing is, you know, and I'll say this to you, I was in Asia, and the yoga's brought my heart rate down to 46 BPM.
Right.
I'm the most fucking insane, fast fucking shooting person I know. How the fuck can that really happen? I'm a million fucking miles an hour.
Yeah.
So the yoga's brought the heart rate down, and they've gone to me, well, okay, this thing that keeps happening, and it's like, well, what is it? Well, okay, my heart beats. And then I got another one. And it worried me for a while.
Yeah.
Kept happening a lot. Like 15 times a day. Weird shit. How can it be? I'm really quite healthy now. I go to, you know, a heart hospital in Thailand. And they've got the doctor's got an EKG. And there it is. It happened right there and then. Big fucking Geiger counter shit, like, wow, okay, I just felt it, it went. I'm like, fuck. And of course you think the usual stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
And the doctor says, abnormal. I'm like, thanks for that. That's really nice for you to say.
No shit.
No shit, Sherlock. And then I go into the doctor. The doctor says, yo, come and take a seat. He's like, look, man, oh, whoa, look, you're not going to die. Let me just tell you this right now. You have what's called a PVC. Okay, well, you know, something vascular current or some shit.
Yeah.
It's basically in the lower chamber of the left heart. There's another heartbeat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. It's just, I said, so he drew the chamber and he said, this heartbeat's coming, you know, across at any time he wants to. I said, so it's kind of like a new heartbeat on a younger heart shooting a pulse across an older heart. He went, that's a great analogy. I went, I'll take that. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you do? And he said, well, we can put a catheter up your fucking left arm and burn the fucker out. And I'm like, mate, my heart's been burnt enough, thank you very much. He says, some people just get used to it. you know, you've reached 50, things will change, your body will change. And he said, manage your sleep. He says, well, you lean back in the chair and you go, oh, do you smoke? I went, I do rituals, you know, American Spirit in an evening. Do you drink? I went, well, probably every 2 months I do a vodka blowout to clean the pipes out.
Yeah.
I started scratching his head. He said, well, are you using it? I went, no, I use it at all. He said, what about... He said, what about exercise? I said, well, I do yoga. How many? 5 times a week. Oh, okay. He said, do you sleep? Four hours. So he said, here's a bag of sleeping sabbaths. And I went, no, thank you. I've done fucking more role hitting than fucking rapists. You know what I mean? Fuck all that. No respect to rapists at all. But
Yeah.
So edit that. I've just done a lot of, you know, I've been doing like a litre of vodka. There's a 2-year period where I was a litre of vodka.
Yeah.
2 roll hypnol and an 1/8 of gear.
Yeah.
Nightly.
Yeah.
Sometimes that went on. And I thought, fuck it, could have gone. So anyway.
You don't need to add to that.
Don't need to. So he says, well, you know, we'll see what happens. And I'm going to get a second opinion now, but I'll take the spiritual explanation.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like I have a new heart.
Yeah.
I feel like I've rebirthed in a way that I never thought I could rebirth.
Yeah. It feels like, I mean, you said, I mean, we'll wrap things up now, but you said right at the start the shock of opening Pandora's box and seeing the good and the bad and everything else that's in there. And it feels like that approach of an abnormality in the heart is going, right, well, there is good and there is bad. The awareness and acceptance of that is key. If we're just right, all we need is the good and the bad has to go, that's never going to happen. I mean, addiction's a great example. Addiction, right, we need to get rid of that. Well, no, if you've got addiction in you, you might need to refocus it.
You might need
to focus it on yoga. You might need to focus it on creating. To think you can go from someone who has a propensity to addiction to not being someone with a propensity to addiction is crazy. That's possibly an unreachable goal. So it's rather being aware of the positives and the negatives and using them for yourself, angling them, controlling them, taking them in your direction.
I also think I want to end it on this in a sense that Stephen Fry gave me this book once called Some. Which I found was a beautiful book by David Eagleman.
Yeah.
It's a thin book.
Yeah.
Tales of the Afterlife. Remember this book?
Yeah.
You know, what if? You know, it's like Buddhist monks did stand-up comedy almost.
Yeah.
Because Buddhism is what obviously me and my wife lean.
Some, it's S-U-M, isn't it?
Yeah. We tend to lean towards Buddhism a lot because obviously we're in Thailand and everything. You know, and I kind of wrote about it, Text Message of the Universe, the chapter's called in the book. It's All Things Remembered. It's out in October. But, you know, say we go to heaven and there's a God. Your God, the one that you've been praying to for a while. You know, push your God if you like. Muslim God with 5 heads, whatever it is. Great. And there's a candy floss chair. Beautiful candy floss chair. Lots of virgins, whatever you want. You can sit in the chair infinitely, forever. You're going to want to get up.
Yeah.
And if you've sinned and we're going to burn you, we're going to keep burning you, and we'll keep burning. So you pass out and you come around, you're going to pass out and you come around. And you're going to burn in hell. And you're going to keep burning. Sooner or later, that ain't going to burn anymore, is it?
No.
Because I've become resilient in this life. You can give me any hell, any heaven.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, the sound of that plane's real. You're real.
Yeah.
This is real. Now, I'm not an atheist, but this ain't going with me in this capacity. I'm all about right now. This is it. What we do today creates tomorrow. It's very, very simple. And the fact of there's one thing I want to say. Me and this school teacher, we're going to end it on this guy called James Geary. Geary, you know, synonymous with Boston.
Yeah.
Teaches my kid school. My kid's even got a slight Boston twang because of this motherfucker. You know what I mean? It's true. So anyway, we go and we do Qigong in the morning. In the schoolyard, but we got to do Si Chi, we call it. We go in the sea first, and we talk philosophy. And what we've come up with, that's all this is, this energy. It's going to shift from one to the next. It's just basically, you know, a singular sequence of consecutive miracles set in infinite moments over billions of years. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all this is.
Amazing.
Because that sums up science and the fact of the consequence, the sequence of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Consecutive miracles.
Yeah.
The eyebrows to stop water. Come on. This isn't a fucking, you know, IKEA just about got it right in this century, right?
Yeah.
The handle that puts it on the fridge. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the design of it all, if it's fuck all, maybe we are correct. You know, maybe Infinity was a child.
Yeah.
And in this conscious universe is just exploding around us, for good or bad, I don't mind being at the end of it.
And it kind of equally makes kind of quite literally anything possible, just anything. Because, well, it's got this far and it shouldn't have. It's been miracle after miracle to get here.
If you were in Infinity and you were just one thought particle and you went, in 2 billion years, there'll be objects floating around with exoskeletons on a planet called Earth. Get the fuck out of here. I want to fly around in space. So the fact that we're here, why can't we, with this electrical current that we have, create the afterlife in some kind of positive charge? Yeah. Just one thing, if it's conscious enough. So I'm training my ninja shit right now. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, perfect. That's a beautiful note to end it on. Thank you very much for taking your time, my man. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Scroobs. God bless you, man.
You've been listening to Scroobs Picks Discretion Pieces.
There you go. That was golden. That was an intense ride, wasn't it, guys? I'm not imagining that. I finished that episode, and I felt like I'd gone 10 rounds with Mike Tyson, but in a good way. It was amazing. He's a force of nature, is our Goldie. Wonderful chat. I went straight on after that, and I recorded a podcast with Doc Brown. That's not going to be out for a few weeks now because I've got a few different things lined up, but I want to tell you about next week's episode. Next week's episode is a really special one. I've got a guy on called, and originally, I'll explain this, originally Doc Brown was going to be next week, and this other episode was going to be in a few weeks' time, but then I recorded it, and it felt like such a strong and important and moving episode that I had to move it forward. So it's with a guy called Wayne Sharrocks, and Wayne is kind of a campaigner for the age of joining the army to be pushed up, because he first applied for the army at 15 years and 9 months, which is the minimum. And he feels, you know, it's done irreparable damage. Before anyone gets a weird, really, please have a listen, because it's not anti-soldiers, it's not anti-army, it's not anti-war even particularly. It's just him telling kind of honest stories. And his argument is, we're brought up to think of G.I. Joe and Action Man and heroes. And that's fine, but that's not the full story. And he feels everyone entering into that should know the full story before they go in, as with any job. So yeah, I hope you'll tune in for that one. It's a bit of a special one. Then the week after that, I've got the Destiny special, which I know a lot of you have been waiting for. I've had a lot of tweets about. I got to go to the gameplay premiere of Destiny. It was fantastic. So yeah, that's coming the week after that. And then we're going to have a drunk cast, because we've not had one in a while. And then there's a load more to come. Doc Brown, Laura Dockrill, Alice Lowe. There's a lot of people to come. So more to come on the podcast. But for now, I'll wrap that up. That was Goldie. I hope you enjoyed it. I've been Scroobius Pip, and I'm out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.